What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
From Tim L. Tim L. writes, Sheehan, calm the blank down? Question mark. I can't calm down after that crap. It must get better Monday night. This from Austin. Kevin, I know you don't care much about this, but it looks like they're living off last year's success. Overconfidence would be devastating to a team that overachieved as much as this team did last year. Good to be back. I missed yesterday because I had a flight canceled back from Florida on Sunday night. I was planning on being here yesterday. Big storms in the Delray Palm Beach area, and the flight got canceled. So I had to come back to yesterday morning, thanks to Denton and Max. Denton's the best, and he filled in more than I'm sure admirably. Thanks to him. We're here today, tomorrow, Thursday. They are intra-squad scrimmaging today out in Ashburn. The Burgundy versus the Gold team. We'll get Ben on at 12 to tell us how that went. Dan Quinn spoke this morning, answered a question about Terry McLaurin. You will hear that. I'm going to take the first part of this show to just, you know, recap a bit, I guess, the preseason opener against the Patriots. Let me just start with this. Did you know that the 48 points scored by New England on Friday night were the most in a preseason game since 2022. 2022, the Dolphins beat the Eagles 48-10 in the preseason. The Eagles did go on to have a rather decent season, 14-3, and they went to the Super Bowl, where they lost, you know, an epic to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So it didn't really impact them much, giving up 48 and getting blown out. The most points, so that equaled the 48 by the Patriots. You got to go back to 2018 to find more than 48 scored in a preseason game. The Dolphins did that. The Packers did that. 51 points against the Steelers in a preseason game. Also, did you know that the overs in preseason week number one, Max, went 14-2. 14-2.
Yeah, they're getting us, Kevin. They know exactly what we want in preseason. They know we like the unders, and here we are now. They've taken full advantage.
Well, the totals are so low for preseason games. They're all in the 30s, basically, and some very low 30s, because typically, you know, there are a lot of 16-10 games in the preseason. Not this past weekend. Eight teams scored 30 or more points in preseason week number one. Last year, just two teams in week number one scored 30 or more. Is it significant? No, it's not. Nor is, you know, what happened on Friday night. God, some of you are going to hate me for this take, but let me get to it. I am completely unconcerned about Friday night's result. Austin writes, as I mentioned, they're living off last year's success. Who's they? Do you know who played in the game, Austin? 39 of the 58 players who played in the game won't be on the roster in 3 weeks. So that's the they that you're talking about. Overconfidence? Who's overconfident? The players that are going to play against the Giants weren't dressed for the game. What are you talking about? So 58 players played in the game, all right? 58. These would be position players, not counting kicker, punter, long snapper, and holder, which, oh, by the way, is our punter in Tressway. Of those 58, 19 of those will likely make the team, 39 won't. How do I know that? Well, because of the 30 that didn't dress or didn't travel to the game Friday night, 29 of those are pretty much locks to make the team. In fact, every projected starter sat on Friday night, with the exception, again, kicker, punter, long snapper, and maybe Josh Connerly Jr., the first-round pick who played 21 snaps on Friday night. The 39 players out of the 58, if you assume 29 of the 30 are going to make the team, and the kicker, the punter, the long snapper are going to make the team, and they'll probably add another player or two that's not on the roster now that will be on the opening day roster. That's 34. They got 53. That's 19. If you subtract 19 from 58, that means 39 of the players who played on Friday night will not be with this particular organization on its 53-man roster on opening day. Some will be on the practice squad. Some will. So, yeah, I am totally, totally unbothered by what happened on Friday night. I think most of you are with me. I think this is a social media thing where people are alarmed. And look, I observed the same thing you did. It's just how we processed it. I observed a team that wasn't energetic or certainly didn't match the energy, with the exception of a few players like Jeremy Reeves as an example, didn't match the energy level or the enthusiasm level or the intensity level of Mike Vrabel's Patriots on Friday night, especially in the first half. I observed how sloppy they were. I did. The 13 penalties for 98 yards, the drop passes, the missed tackles, etc. I observed all of that. It just doesn't bother me even in the least, because those players aren't going to be, for the most part, on the team when they open up with the Giants on September 7th. We do this, people. We do this every year. I know it's a different team and a different reaction because they were good last year. And there's more anticipation and more excitement about the upcoming season than there's been for any team in decades, okay? I think it's probably the... Kevin in Arlington, when we did this last week, and I said, I think it's the most anticipation for a season since 2000. I mean, 2013 obviously was a big deal, but we didn't know what RG3's physical status would be. And Kevin said, what about 2004? Gibbs' return. Yeah, that's true. We were really excited about Gibbs' return in 2004. So I get the heightened, you know, interest, but maybe that's part of the problem, is that a lot of these people weighing in and being super panicked by what happened Friday night haven't really paid attention for the last many years. But most of them are NFL fans. Like, it just doesn't matter, people. Now, Monday night, will we get starters playing? Yeah, we will, but not for an entire game. Probably for a series or two. That's not a real concern level if they don't play well. Look, I pointed out on Friday night, late Friday night after the game, that last year, one of the observations I made was that Quinn seems to have this team energetic, enthusiastic. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, everybody was learning each other, and he did a good job, but did it carry over into the regular season? I'll tell you what, the least energetic game they played all year was the opener against Tampa. Now, it was hot as you know what. The humidity was thick, and they ran out of gas in that game, no doubt. But I just cannot summon up any kind of concern. I'm not going to try to do it. I'm certainly not feeling that at all in terms of Friday night. Now, observations made about Friday night. Keep in mind, the observations are tricky because who are they playing against? Who are they playing with? Are the players they are playing with going to actually be NFL players? Are the players that they're playing against actually going to be NFL players? What was the context of the play that was called or the drive that was called? Were they trying to evaluate players doing something that we weren't aware of? Because we do know that the preseason isn't designed to game plan wins. It is for the coaches to evaluate players, typically for key roster spots at the back end of the roster. You know, 47 through 53 or 50 through 53, if you've got a team that's sort of already there. You know, now, you know, you do have starters getting into a rhythm, playing under the lights. You've got some mental toughness evaluation going on. Like, old Johnny's out there for the first time as an NFL player. Did he soil himself? Or did he, was he a gamer? You know, a lot of the psychological stuff, you can, that can be revealing, not to us as much as to the coaches. We can see things like, hey, man, he missed two field goals. Well, Matt Gay missed one. Or the running back fumbled three times. We can see that. We can see a quarterback missing an open receiver three or four times. We can see five drop passes. Most of what we can observe tends to be more on the negative side. Because the positive results sometimes are misleading as well. Again, who's in the game and who's on the other side of the ball? No game planning, either side of the ball. New England definitely had a different agenda on Friday night. I think that was obvious. They played their starters a bit. Washington didn't play any of them. They were fired up. They have to change a culture right now. You know, it's where Dan Quinn had this team last year. He had to change a culture. They were 4-13 last year, just like Washington was in 2023. So I cannot, I mean, you'd have to pay me big money to get worked up about the results of a preseason game. What matters this time of year is health and then things like the Terry McLaurin situation. You know, making sure that your best players, he's going to be on the field, but are, you know, ready to go on September 7th. Now, I do think a debatable topic, and one we've had before this time of year, is should starters play or shouldn't they play? I think they should play. I think they should get into a rhythm and get into the feel of being tackled, of the quarterback actually having the threat of being tackled. Under the lights, in front of fans, with referees, with a scoreboard, a clock, the score being kept, etc. Like, I actually think that I've always felt like I'd like to see the starters play a bit more. You know, Cincinnati has started off every regular season with Joe Burrow poorly. So Zach Taylor switched it up this summer. I mean, you know, you can't keep doing the same things over and over again and expect, what, different results. So he switched it up, and his starters played the first quarter against the Eagles the other night and were very impressive offensively, not so much on defense. That's what their team was last year. And we will get Cincinnati starters on Monday night. I would hope that we'll match that with our starters for a little bit. But even if they get completely outplayed, there's no game planning. You're only in there for a series or two. We've already seen that with this particular group, this particular quarterback, the only way to judge him is over four quarters, not two series, although they didn't punt much, period, last year. But I do think there's some value. We've seen this previous years. Saw it a lot with Belichick and Brady's Patriots, where Brady would go out there in the first quarter and throw 16 balls. They wouldn't run it once. And they thought it was important from the standpoint of rhythm and timing, which is the passing game, much more so than it is the running game, to get that work in against somebody else in a game situation, even though it's not, you know, going to be there for all 60 minutes. You know, so I wouldn't mind watching Jaden on Monday night come out and sling it around for a series or two. I don't know what they're going to do. I would assume the starters are going to play. So looking forward to watching that game a little bit more, I guess. But yeah, hard for me to get worked up. Now, the evaluation part, player evaluation, again, tricky for us because of all the things that I said. But the players that stood out to me, I thought Jeremy Reeves had a ton of energy and enthusiasm. Clearly, Johnny Newton had the play of the game. There weren't many to choose from, the sack strip. I thought that the receiver, Ja'Cory Brooks, you know, stood out a little bit. Five targets, five catches. He's a big target. He got a little bit of separation against whom? I'm not entirely sure whether or not the guy that was covering him or the guys that were covering him are going to be on an NFL roster. But, you know, he's 6'3". He's 200 pounds. You know, this was one of the guys they gave money to as an undrafted free agent. I thought that he kind of stood out to me. I thought the tight end that did drop a ball but also caught a couple of others, 89 Cager, stood out to me. It's so hard to evaluate offensive line play for this time of year. Again, you know, there's no game planning. There's no play calling based on down distance most of the time, a lot of the time anyway. But, you know, certainly reading some of what coaches said, Connerly Jr. had probably a decent day. I thought, you know, from a vision standpoint, I thought Bill Merritt, Jacory Kroski Merritt, the running back, even though it was, what was it, Max, 7 carries for 22 yards or whatever?
Something like that, yeah.
I actually think that his vision looks like it's there as a runner.
Very
you know,
much.
These are, again, you know, who's blocking for him, who are they going against, but you could see that as a college player, New Mexico in particular. Little bit upright in his running style. You know, we talked about that after they drafted him. Knew nothing about him before the draft, just looking at him afterwards. But he definitely has good running back vision. Man, Josh Johnson is just a pro. I don't know if Sam Hartman took... I mean, isn't Josh Johnson going to be the third quarterback anyway? Didn't they sign him understanding that he was going to basically be the Jeff Driskel of this year? Sam Hartman to the practice squad. I'm assuming that that's what it's going to be. I think Josh Johnson and Adam Peters, you know, he was in San Francisco. Josh Johnson is 39 years old. Jay Gruden called him one of the smartest players he's ever been around. I would assume that his next move is to get into coaching or to stay in football. Maybe it'll be with this organization. The other team showed more energy and more effort and executed better. In a preseason game in which 39 of the 58 players who played in the game for our team will not be on the opening day roster. So, 301-230-0980. I'm assuming that Denton took calls yesterday, but if you want to weigh in with me, phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. I just have zero concern about this football team, despite the result on Friday night. Zero. In terms of because of that. Look, by the way, those that are concerned, you might be proven right. I'm not saying that you'll be proven wrong, but it's not going to be because of what happened on Friday night. If they end up being a less energetic, poorly coached, sloppy football team this year, I don't want to hear people say we saw it in the first preseason game. No, you didn't see it in the first preseason game. The players that ended up being sloppy and less energetic during the regular season didn't play in that game. So I'd like to see it with them in a regular season game before I get alarmed. For me, the biggest area of concern still is defense. What will it look like when we're playing real games? And my biggest area of confidence is the quarterback, who, by the way, was ranked again in one of those quarterback tier situations. We'll get to that on the show today. But 301-230-0980. What is your level of concern after Friday night? 0 to 5. 0, no concern. 5 is a 5-alarm fire. We're in trouble. Where are you on that scale? Phone calls next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Joining me right now is John Keim at John_Keim on X on Twitter. I just retweeted the column that he put out earlier this morning, why Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin are at an impasse. It is worth the read. We're going to talk about it right now. John goes into the reasons the team feels the way it feels, the reasons that Terry feels the way it feels. Before we get into kind of the granular detail of what you wrote, and I read it during one of the breaks during the show, what do you think is a reveal in this story? Because there's something that you wrote that I do think is newsworthy. What do you think is newsworthy or a big reveal?
You know, it's honestly, Kevin, sometimes it's hard for me to say, and I have these conversations with my editor because, you're so close to it that I'm like, I don't know what people know or not, because a lot of this stuff is stuff that I've discussed or written in various forms, other people have discussed. So I think, you know, I'd have to, I'm not sure.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell me what you...
You wrote in the first part of the story, one league source said he could see the Commanders eventually agreeing to pay $28 million per year. Last week, you know, with the Jeremy Fowler, another ESPN guy, talking about first 23 and then amending it to 25, he said they might be willing to go up a little bit from there, but nothing that would start with a 3. You sort of defined it here with a source. I think that that's the first time we've heard the team would be willing to go to 28.
And I think like that, I think would be where, I think my sense would be that would probably be the highest, right? And the only way, like, I don't think it starts with a 3 either, unless there's some ridiculously backloaded third year where he has no chance of seeing it, and then it's a bogus deal, right?
Right.
So, like, yeah, I don't think they want to go above the number that I said. I don't see that. So,
but they might be willing to get to that number.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I do think that to get this done, that I'll say, like, Adam Peters is not talking about this, right? So you piece things together. And so could I see that getting there? Yes. Is it, I don't know how likely that is. But I think if you want to get it done, I think that's where they'd have to get to. And I think that's where Terry and his side would have to go down to. They're not going up to his number.
All right. We're talking to John. So,
and I sort of, I forgot. I didn't forget about that part. But, like, you just forget, like, what has been discussed publicly, what is known publicly all the time. And so sometimes you just, like, yeah, okay, I forgot that.
So before we get into, you know, a lot of the detail again, I want you to describe what the tone of this impasse is now. Because you start off your story about how everybody feels good about each other and, you know, at the beginning of camp, and he's hugging the owner. And, well, you know, we saw him the other day with Adam Peters. But, you know, looks happy, you know, holding in, you know, versus holding out. And everybody loves him. But where is the tone of this negotiation now, player and Terry's side?
Well, I think, you know, what I've already been told, like, obviously he likes being around his team, the teammates, et cetera, but clearly there is some unhappiness with the negotiations, which means front office. So, like, that's where we're at. And, you know, they're the ones that are controlling the purse strings. So that's where any frustration is going to be directed. And I think it's also why coaches stay out of this business, because you don't want to ruin the other aspect of it. Because if the coaches start applying pressure or saying things, you know, then you start to create more resentment. And that's what you have to avoid. But so any frustration would be with the front office.
So, understood. Is it hurt? Is it anger? Is it just frustration? I felt like that 35-minute press conference, I sensed a guy that was hurt.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And keep in mind, like, this is the reason why Terry McLaurin has traveled the road he has, going from a guy who went to Ohio State camp to try and get a scholarship, to having Urban Meyer telling him, not good enough yet, come back when you can do this, and then he did. And then you go from a guy who is a backup at Ohio State, starts to emerge a little bit as a senior, third-round pick, to this. You have a lot of pride, and the passion that he plays with comes out, right? And so, like, all that is that package. So if you don't, you know, and he has always placed a high value on himself. So when you know that, and then you don't feel like someone else values you the same way you value yourself, this is what comes out. And I think, and that's what we saw in that press conference, which was a very long press conference for anything. Like, I remember back in the day when Trent Williams had his, when he came back after the whole cancer scare, his holdout, et cetera, and it was like 20 minutes. I'm like, God, that's a long one. Well, this was even longer, and you could just sense the hurt and the frustration all the emotions. But, you know, but that's who he is, right? And it's why he's gone this way. So it's not a surprise that he would feel hurt because, like, hey, this is what I've done. Why don't you see it the same way?
All right. I want to get into some of the detail now by asking you the following question, and then you can answer it with some of the detail that you had in this story. Some of it is what we've all talked about, but
right. It's
also very well defined. Why, John, doesn't the team value Terry the way he thinks the team should value Terry?
All right. Well, let's start with age, and that's always going to be the state, and it's why I always felt like this would be a tricky one because
right. They
couldn't get past that. Like, it's not just that he's going to turn 30 this year. He's under contract this year. So this isn't about 30. This is about 31, 32, 33. So what do you want to pay somebody who's going to hit that point? They're very analytics-based. The analytics is not good or kind to receivers who hit that point. Now, could he be a unicorn with that? Sure. But then this, I would still say, like, we had our ESPN research. I asked them to kind of look up some numbers, and you see guys like Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Andre Johnson, you know, guys who are at or near Hall of Fame level players, right? Or in. And like their drops were precipitous
right. After
that
yeah. Age.
And not only were their drops precipitous, their numbers beforehand were a lot higher than where Terry's at.
Yeah.
So, and you can point to quarterback play, sure. Not every receiver has great quarterback play, but you can point it to Terry. But then you can look at last year, and his yards, receiving yards per game, were the third lowest of his career. So it wasn't like, you know what I mean? Like, so he had, but he was more productive with the targets and catches he had because of 13 touchdowns. So there's a yin and a yang with that. But the point is, like, the production he's giving you now is not where their level was, and they dropped. And those are, you know, so that was always going to be the sticking point. But then again, McLaurin's side will say only going into his seventh year, so he doesn't have the same wear and tear on the legs. So his consistency may be he might be more consistent. His game might age more consistently, right? And so, like, and you know what? Who the heck knows? But they're looking at, this is like a risk management, right? So if you're looking at that, like what typically happens, and typically with receivers, that's what happens. And so that has always, to me, been the number one sticking point. And there's obviously, I'm sure we'll get into other stuff, but like then you can, because you can look at the DK Metcalf deal and it's a your production is very similar. But he's 2 years younger. Also, he was traded to Pittsburgh. So they had to extend him, so he had the leverage over them. The leverage here is he's under contract. So obviously they need him, right? We know that. Nobody would dispute that or should dispute that. But he is under contract, so it's a little bit different situation. I think it's why Metcalf got more, but they would point to he's 2 years younger. And that makes a difference for any receiver on the market.
Look, I think there's more with Metcalf than just 2 years younger. And obviously the big difference in terms of leverage with respect to, you know, a negotiation is, you know, hey, just so you know, you trade for me, I need a new deal. Terry's under contract. But, you know, I've heard people say that you ask 20 NFL GMs and, you know, the majority of them would take Metcalf over Terry straight up, regardless of age.
Speed. Yeah. I mean, it's because the measurables, like, and, you know, and so you see that and it's like, that's what people would look for. I've heard that too. And so, you know, but McLaurin has been, as one coach told me, like the heart who used to coach here, heartbeat of the team. Now this coach did not see him as a number one receiver, but the more he's here, the more you understood the importance of him to this offense and to the team. So
say that again. Say what you just said again.
Initially, this coach did not see him as a
this
number
coach,
one
meaning Quinn or Kingsbury.
Oh no!
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that.
No.
My fault.
No. Sorry, but somebody I talked to said called him the heartbeat of the team. Now, that particular coach did not think initially that he was a number one receiver.
Got it.
But I think that's also something where, you know, I think you have to sometimes be around him to feel that impact. And that's what this coach felt. So I think that's because it's always why, like when you hear from scouts say, oh, I want to be at a game because I want to feel this person's impact. This is what they, this is the kind of guy they talk about, right? Because like you may watch film and do you feel it all the time? But when you're there around it, then you do. And so like that's, you know, the plus for him. But, but with Metcalf, the size and the speed are things that people will always point to and feel like, you know, hey, we can get even more out of them because, you know, that's how coaches think.
What else beyond age? I think you did such a good job in having some of that research and the analytics and the fact that the team may be relying on some of that, you know, post-age 31 season data as part of their thought process. What else? Other reasons why they don't view Terry the way Terry and his agent view themselves?
Well, part of it, too, is precedent. So, excuse me, while they clearly... I think every year Jaden Daniels is here, they will view themselves as being in a Super Bowl window. So just start with that. And it's why they went out and got guys like Laremy Tunsil, Marshawn Lattimore, you know, bringing in Von Miller, et cetera. But the precedent part is that, okay, let's say they hit Terry's number, which would be, you know, right now, anywhere between $5 to $8 million more than they would want per year.
Right.
So what happens when Laremy Tunsil's up for an extension? They traded for him. They traded several picks for him. What is he going to say? Is he going to say that, you know, Terry was here and he went through all this, so, you know, it's okay that he got overpaid in their eyes, right? Like, McLaurin may not feel that way, right? But the team would feel that way.
Yeah.
So how is Tunsil going to view that? How is Frankie Louvu and his agent going to view that? He was a priority signing for them on the first day of the free agency that they were here. Marshawn Lattimore, possible extension. Debo Samuel, depending on what he does, would they want to keep him?
Next offseason could be very busy.
Right. And so if you feel like you're overpaying for guys at a certain amount, you're going to be now doing that for a lot of guys. Now, would you do that for Jaden Daniels? Yeah, he's a quarterback, you know, and he's young. And so it would be different. But that they don't want to get into that game. And the other part, too, is because from McLaurin's side, they'll say, you know, and he'll even kind of point out, like, what he went through here. And what he went through, we all saw it, and it was terrific, you know, true pro and all that. For them, they're going to say, we're paying for the next 3 years, not the last however many.
That's right.
Because they weren't here. And so, like, they could kind of, like, yeah, the reason why it's better is because they're here. So, you know, like, that's why I say, like, there's a definite difference of how they view it on multiple ways, but the precedent is a big one. The other thing, Kevin, in the next 2 years, in 26 and 27, I think it's 1 year they have the fewest under contract, maybe 1 year it's like 31st few, you know, so like the second fewest under contract. They're going to have a lot of spots to fill, in part because the failed draft classes of the past. Like, that's a major issue.
Plus a lot of these 1 year deals too.
But I think what's come about in part because of all those failed draft classes,
right?
And partly, right? But yes, it was all these 1 year deals, and so, you know, trying to not saddle yourself with what they would consider bad contracts while you're trying to build through the draft. It's a tricky way because, you know, it leads to an older roster with a lot of young guys. Anyway, so precedent is a big one too. And you know, that's definitely a big one.
I think it's commonsensical to consider precedent. And I don't have a problem with the fans that say, yeah, but he's so important and you're trying to win the Super Bowl this year. That precedent, especially with what they'll have potentially next offseason and the offseason after that, they have to be thinking about the big picture. So let's cut to the chase. What's your hunch right now on how this gets resolved. The options are, you know, an extension where Terry has to come back a lot and give a lot, and maybe the team comes up a little bit to something with a number starting with a 2. He plays this year under his existing contract. They have next year the flexibility of the tag. There's a holdout that's, you know, in play. How do you see it playing out between now and September 7th?
So, going into camp and even early, like you're saying, at some point they're going to get this done.
Right.
But I still look at it and say, okay, but how are you going to bridge these divides? And is getting up to a 28, 28 and a half enough to do that? I don't know yet. And so, like, I would lean toward that happening because ultimately both sides are better together. And I think, you know, the hard part for McLaurin is, first of all, he is under contract. So the leverage is you're under contract. So this isn't about, like, if you don't want to report this year, you're not getting the big deal next offseason. Like, you know, like, it's not.
Exactly.
That and, like, I, you know, even just as I'm talking to, and I haven't talked to every team, but the general feeling I've gotten when you talk to people, like, no, nobody is going to do that. And so if you sit out, not only are you costing, you know, losing your weekly game check, but you're hurting your future value, because then at 30, like, you don't 30 a guy who's going to be 31 coming off a year he didn't play, yeah, you could say, well, you didn't get the wear and tear on your legs, but you're still 31, and so, like, that's a risk for him.
Huge.
So yeah, very big risk. And now the other risk is you come in, you get hurt, right? But that's a risk for any player. So, like, you can use that for any player in any situation. The risk is always you get hurt. That's why players like security. I remember, you know, there were players back in the day who said they'd never play for Steve Spurrier, and they signed extensions because security. So that's a big deal. And so for him, I think ultimately, I think it gets to that. And I just, this team clearly could use him. We know that. We know what he means to this offense. And I also think, like, McLaurin is very well, you know, like, this, I think he's so beloved here. I don't think you're going to get that anywhere else, if that, how much that matters to him. Right. And so, you know, I mean, I think it's just better to, for them to get this worked out. And so I would lean toward that, but my lean is not as strong as it used to be, just because, like,
yeah,
you've got to bridge these divides. And here's the other thing, Kevin, if I don't know that it would be, I think when the sides get to, if they got together, it's okay, strip this away, I think you could get this done pretty quick, but you've got to get to that point. And so far we're not there. Doesn't sound like it yet.
Now, here's one more question.
Like, I watched James Cook sign today. I'm like, you know, nothing would shock me at this point, because it's, you know, I just, like I said, I think when they're, both sides are ready, I think you could go like that. And, you know, they're not going to exactly call me up on the phone and say, hey, we're going. So.
Yeah. John's written a column this morning on ESPN.com. It's a lengthy column that addresses a lot of what's going on right now between Terry and the team. It's totally worth the read. John's addressed why the team, you know, believes he's worth a lot less than what Terry believes he's worth, which is more in the DK Metcalf contract range, you know, age, the precedent, the evaluation of the player, etc. By the way, I'm still a lean on a deal, getting a deal done, but less of one than I was a few weeks ago. But what really makes sense from Terry's standpoint, if they really get a sense the team's not getting anywhere near that, is bird in hand. You know, $50 million guaranteed or $55 million guaranteed is a lot more than what he'll get paid this year, and even if they were to franchise tag him for 2026. So we'll see how it weighs out. But I do want to ask you one more specific question, and you didn't mention any of this. He's got this supposed ankle injury. Is the PUP list, missing the first 4 games, getting paid? Is that even in play, do you think?
I don't see how that would or should be, to be honest. So if they do that, there's something else going on, right? And I don't, that, I just don't think that's in anybody's best interest, because
He'd miss the first four games, definitely. Right, you can't bring him back before week five.
No. Right, and so, like, he's not... I do not believe the ankle injury is that serious.
Right.
So, you know, like, so it would be surprising to me, and it, to me, that wouldn't make sense. Like, this team wants to win, and the way McLaurin, and let's say they don't work out a deal, the only way he can really show that, hey, you're missing the mark here, is to be out there on the field. So, you know, come, you know what I mean? Like, so I just don't see any value to keeping him on there.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I would push back and say he has no leverage right now, but could gain a little leverage if he didn't play and offensively they fell apart without him.
Sure, but, and you know, but you know,
but
what
I don't think
then?
They believe that they would fall apart without him. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, and I think the other thing is, then you have a lot of guys in that locker room who know. And this is without me talking to a single player about this, because I haven't gone down this road, because I don't think that Terry would do that. And I, you know, it's just not who he is, right? But I think if you do that, then you risk, to me, wouldn't you risk your standing in the locker room? If they know you can play and you're doing this because of this, and it's just to show that, then what are other guys going to say?
Yeah.
Like, he's a beloved guy, and they're like, he's very well respected. So, and he's been a captain for a reason. So that doesn't sound, you know, and like, I think players understand the business in the off season. During the season, they want to win. And if, you know, guys want to see guys out there who are able to play. And that would be, to me, another risk. And then, like, again, so you're risking on multiple levels. It doesn't seem like it's who he is.
Great job. It's a good read. Appreciate you jumping on short ask and notice. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, John Keim, everybody. So, where are you right now? John's got some really good stuff, and I'll kind of reset it when we come back. But 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What's your prediction on how this plays out? How would you like to see it play out at this point as well? He gets something done for closer to what the team wants to pay him, maybe a slight increase to something like 28 per year, play on the final year of his deal, or maybe he holds out. So I want to know what you think will happen and what you'd like to see happen here between now and the beginning of the season. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, the team980.com, 301-230-0980. Phone lines are open. All right, joining me now and back by popular demand, every time Fred is on the show, I get no less than two dozen tweets saying, could you do this weekly with him? I can't do it weekly with him because he's so busy. He's got about 35 different jobs. He does the pregame show on Big 100 for the Commanders games. He does the postgame show. He does the pregame with Michael Jenkins. He does, of course, the postgame with our good friend Scott Jackson. He's a big part of the Commanders YouTube and website programming. You can follow him on X at FSmoot21SeanT. And, of course, everybody knows Fred because he was one damn good cornerback for seven seasons here as a Washington Redskin. So before we get to some of your observations of the team so far this summer, I wanted to start with this. During your career, when you were playing, is there a player that comes to mind, a young player, a draft pick, an undrafted free agent, that when you saw him for the first time during training camp or maybe even the offseason leading up to training camp, you knew you were watching a future star?
Yeah, a couple of times. You got to realize that nothing is more flawed than the draft process.
Right.
The draft process is not looking for people by pure talent. They're looking for reasons why not to draft you. Like, that's the thing about it. So when these guys come in as free agents, they end up London Fletcher, who's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Think about this. I remember the first time with my two classmates. I remember watching Antonio Pierce. I remember talking to Antonio Pierce, and that's all I need to do. I'm like, this is one of the smartest football players I think I ever been around, and I watched him move, and I watched him orchestrate a defense. He wasn't getting many reps, but I said, hey, AP going to be that boy one day. Then we had Ife Oelate. You remember Ife?
Yeah, of course.
Drafted Edom. We ended up getting a lot of playing out of Ife. So sometimes you see these guys, they see through the cracks because maybe they didn't run the fastest 40 time, or maybe they didn't have the most lifts, or maybe they wasn't the quickest in the drills. It's something. They're looking for a reason why not instead of a reason why.
Those are interesting answers. You know, when Antonio Pierce got the interim job in Vegas, Cooley said to me on the air, he said, he'll get the full-time job. And I said, why? And he said, because Antonio's one of the smartest players I've ever played with and one of the best communicators I've ever played with. Now, it didn't work out for him, but he did get the job. He did get the opportunity the job. I'm actually surprised. And look, you went with actually a better answer because these were guys that not everybody was expecting things out of. I'm surprised. I thought the first person you were going to mention would be Sean, that the first time you saw him, you knew that there was greatness.
I've been saying that's low-hanging fruit.
I know. No, you're right. You're right.
You're like, the one thing, here go the NFL. You got the 1%, that's the NFL. If you make it to the NFL, you are legitimately part of the 1% athletes when it comes to football in the world. Now, it's the 1% of the 1%. There's a couple of guys that are just freaks. They're creatures. They're a little bit different than everybody else. Everybody else is great. They're good. Their athletic profile is off the charts. But some of these dudes come with not only the athletic profile that's oddly different, maybe they're big for their position, maybe they're like too fast for their position. There's something oddly about these dudes. And then it's all about personality traits, and then it's all about how do they play football? Do they play it with an edge? So you knew Sean was different from day one. Like, we knew Sean was different from watching his Miami tape. Right. It wasn't hard to understand that this dude was going to be different. You know what? I'm going to tell you somebody who I think most people would agree with me was totally freakish athlete. I think we totally utilized him wrong. But I don't think we got the best out of LeVar Arrington. I think if we was more of a 3-4 front and him rushing off the edge as a true outside edge rushing linebacker instead of forcing him to play in space, I think Hall of Famer, easily. Like, it's just some guys, you get them to teams and they're just not utilized correctly. Yeah. There's no way I would have had a 6'4", 255-pound linebacker that can run with the wind. I'm not having him just play in space. No, I'm not doing it.
Well, I mean, how many times have we all talked about LeVar? Like, I think you and I have talked about him before because my belief, first of all, he was injured a lot, and that hurt him in his career, no doubt. But I've believed this all along, that if Marty stays as the head coach, LeVar Arrington becomes an absolute superstar player playing for Marty Schottenheimer.
Yes, you are correct. Because Marty really had bent us to his will. Marty had us where he wanted us at the end of the year.
Right.
People might remember that alpha start to that year, but we really got the rolling. And you got to realize that was with Tony Banks at quarterback.
Yeah.
So it ain't like we had the most explosive offense, but defensively, between Camp LeVar, we still had Bruce Smith rushing the passer. We had some dudes that could go out there and make some plays, and we made some plays on the back end.
Let me tell you something. That season, and I know we've talked about this season before, but you know, it's the 0-5 start, and by the way, LeVar turns it around with the pick six in Carolina against the Panthers.
Carolina.
All right?
Against Carolina. Yes.
And that starts a 5-game win streak with, as you said, Tony Banks and Kent Graham at quarterback. And the game that I'll never forget was the game in Denver. All right, this is your rookie season. It's cold. It's sleeting out. Tony Banks is over there shivering on the sideline. And Kent Graham comes in, and you guys shock Denver on the road to get to 5-5. That team in that moment looked like a playoff team.
Yes. We really got the rolling. And like you say, it was more, we was not singular, we was more the sum of our parts.
Right.
It wasn't glaring. And what we did have was the running game through Stephen Davis.
Yes.
Like, that's what we could lean on, and we could lean on it like anytime, any weather, anything. We had that.
Yeah. You know, the game that killed us that particular year was going for six in a row at home against the Cowboys. And by the way, we were 9-point favorites, 9 or 10-point favorites at that point, because the Cowboys weren't very good. We lost that game. Do you remember who quarterbacked the Cowboys that day? This is
that was one Quincy Carter, yes, who I actually kicked off on the sideline.
Yeah, Quincy Carter was the quarterback.
Yes,
Dave Campo was the head coach.
Yes, I remember that game like it was yesterday. We had a real good game on defense. We made some turnovers that we couldn't get past.
Yeah, that ended up being the difference, really, in, you know, 8 out of the final 11 with Tony Banks and Kent Graham, and anybody that, you know, knew even a little bit about football was like, well, this thing's heading in the right direction. Marty's about to turn around another franchise like he does all the time. And then Dan wasn't having enough fun. And decided that he'd move on from a guy that would have won double-digit games many times, and you guys would have been in the playoffs for many seasons to come. All right, so you answered that question that I gave you. I want the opposite of that, and I know that this is harder, but was there a player that came in as highly touted, as a young player, high draft pick, maybe a highly paid free agent, that you knew the first time you saw him, he wasn't what the front office thought he was?
Oh, so you want me to be GM? Put it on out there.
Yeah.
It's a couple of guys. Let me say this. We have not had a good go when it comes to receivers. Last name Dotson. Maybe we should not draft.
Yeah.
We've tried twice.
Right.
All right.
Just so you know, Josh Doctson, when they picked him, yeah, I thought he was going to be a star. It's the one.
No.
I absolutely was dead wrong, but my son was at TCU. I had watched every game, and I'm like, this dude's big. He's an athlete. He's got hands. But he just didn't love football. That was his problem. But,
listen, I kind of watched him practice, and I was like, no problem. I don't think a DB going to have not a problem with him. Like, he poses no threat.
Yeah,
like I was like, I don't know why he was so highly touted. I don't know. Maybe going against Big 12 defensive backs at that time.
Right.
I don't have a clue. But when I saw him and I saw him run, I saw, like, no, this ain't it right here. This is totally not it.
Yeah.
So it like, we haven't done good in that department. We might need to stay away from that. Who else did I see? I'm trying to think when I played, when I was like, no, that guy ain't going to work, because, you know, I'm big on college football.
Right.
So I was always watching. I'm going to tell you, people, I ain't gonna say that I knew was a bust. I'm going to say that I was shocked didn't work out. How about we rephrase that?
Okay. All right. Well, that's different, but go ahead.
This is one draft where we picked the right picks, but none of them superly blossom out. And that was the second round where we had three draft picks, I think. That was Malcolm Kelly. Devin Thomas and Fred Davis, right?
Right. Yep.
All right. Here go the thing. If Malcolm Kelly knees actually gave him a chance, he was going to be good. So you got that one right, but you didn't get the help part right.
Right.
Devin Thomas should have been converted to a safety or corner from the first day he practiced.
Right? You are going to move him to from wide receiver as a high second round pick. Wide receiver out of what? Michigan State?
State.
Yeah. And you're going to move him to defense.
Yes, I'm going to move in the defense because he had a defensive mentality.
Okay.
He was rough. That's why he was so good on special teams.
Right, he was. Like,
listen to me. Sometimes you just got to know how to – the two positions that get misplaced a lot is wide receiver and corner, because sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the two. And this guy's skill set and mentality laid more to defense. And if they would have played him on defense, he probably would have had a 10-year career starting at defense. I think he would have been that good. All right, so you miss positioning him. And then with Fred Davis, we all know how that went.
Sleepy. He couldn't get up on time.
So, by the way,
would you have been a good receiver?
Yes.
Because you had good great ball skills.
Yes, I would have been a great receiver. I got some plays in at Mississippi State, played wide receiver in high school. Only reason I chose, and me and Santana talk about this all the time, I was like, Tanner, the only reason I chose cornerback over wide receivers is because I don't want a quarterback to control my destiny.
Right.
So I'm going to control my own destiny. And at wide receiver, I'm one bad college quarterback away from y'all, and I didn't know how good I am.
Right. You know, that 2008 draft, I mean, for many years I would reference it as maybe one of the worst NFL drafts of all time. If you look at that draft, 10 players selected, and the only guy that had any sort of career was Chad Reinhart, okay, in terms of the number of games. I mean, Rob Jackson and Chris Horton played a little bit here and there, but you mentioned Malcolm Kelly. They knew he was hurt when they drafted him. So it was a bad draft. But you're saying that Malcolm Kelly and Devin Thomas had some redeeming...
Potential.
Yeah, potential.
Potential.
Yeah.
Okay. And potential most definitely had off the chart potential. Fred Davis, off the chart potential.
He was an athlete.
It wasn't the Fred on the field. It wasn't the Fred on the field. It was the Fred off the field. So it was different. so then you got to also realize. I always tell people this. I don't really believe in bad children. I believe in bad parents. All right, so that's where it starts from. So Everything starts from how the franchise is being ran. Like, we didn't have a franchise that was good enough to nurture Fred at that time and make sure everything was right and have some checks and balances. So it was all about how everything was ran totality-wise.
You said that it wasn't Fred on the field, it was Fred off the field that was the issue. You said that like you're familiar with that description.
No, well, it's no secret. Like, no, I'm just saying, listen to me. When I say Fred was a matchup problem on the field, Fred
I'm
was
talking
a
about you.
Problem.
I'm talking about you.
Oh, if your name's Fred, you probably got both parts of him.
You got, well, let me just say this. Probably a Minnesota fan has a different view than someone like me, a lifelong Redskin fan, because you were awesome here. All right, well, so that's a good, those are good answers. All right, let's get to this team. Where are you on the Terry standoff right now?
Man, you know, as an ex-player, I think we're so numb to it that we don't really – it's not really in our peripheral when somebody has business to handle. Like, this business, that's the NFL. The NFL contract is all drama. It's all he say, she say, I say this, you say this. I guess I don't pay no attention, so I'm not caught up in the semantics like the fan base is. I'm very numb to it. So I think it'll get fixed. They'll handle it.
So you think it will get resolved? I hear you on not paying attention to it, not wanting to talk about someone else's money, but do you think that they'll get a deal? Look, he's under contract. He's got to play for the team this year, but do you think ultimately he'll get a contract extension before the season starts?
I think ultimately it'll always get done. When does he not? Like, this is that. I guess that's why we as athletes don't pay no attention, because I think people be counting the days down and, oh, we've been doing it for 45 days. It's going to eventually, it always eventually works itself out. It always does. It's just tug of war. Who's going to win a tug of war, but they always end up in the middle. It always do.
Okay, then let me ask you a more, a question that is easier to answer for you. What's he missing right now by not being in camp and practicing?
Well, listen, to be good at football, you got to practice football. Like, this is just period. Right. it's a difference between working out and being in true football shape. Like, football has to be like, it's this thing where you just have to do it over and over and over and over again. That's the only way to get in shape. And the only way to do that is to practice. So for me to sit here and say he ain't missing something, but let's understand something about Terry. He's professional now, so he's going to be in shape. He's going to be in shape good enough to do anything you ask him to do. You don't have to worry about that. It's the callousness. Like, the only way to get callous is to, like I say, have that repetitiveness going through it. All right? Sometimes the timing might be off. All right? You're going to add new plays because you got a new offensive line that's going to anchor it way better than last year. So you're going to run more deeper routes, and you're going to do more things. So, yeah, he's missing a lot not being there, but when like I say, but when business is in the air, you got to get it handled before you can get on the field. So that's what's going on.
So if he ended up holding out the rest of camp and then reported on that Wednesday before the Giant game, the opener, for the first, you know, full practice before the opener, as a fan, should I be concerned?
No. He's a professional. He will be ready.
Okay.
Like I told you, he will be ready.
Right.
One thing you don't have to worry about with Terry is he going to be ready? Is he going to be up for the challenge? You don't have to worry about that with Terry. He will be ready.
All right. The player that has stood out the most to you, because you've been watching a lot of these training camp practices, joint practices, preseason game, etc. Give me the player on offense first that has stood out the most to you, you've been most impressed with.
All right, all right. Of course, Merritt has been good. Old Dollar Bill has been good, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I like what I see with him, and I always tell people, I don't know why people are so caught up in where we're drafted at. That don't mean that's what type of quality player is. You find a lot of quality low rounds and free agents. You got to realize we got a guy that has no treads on the tires from last year. You're talking about a guy with spring in his step, can run downhill, can make it happen. I'm very eager to see him run behind that first offensive line. I'm going to tell you this. Ja'Cory Brooks, the wide receiver, has been making plays every chance he gets a chance to make a play. Like, every chance he gets on the field. And, of course, because Terry's not there, he's been getting a lot more chances to get on the field. So I guess if you got one underlying good thing that's happening because he's not there, there's a lot of other guys that get a chance to show that they can go out there and play also. So I would say him, Jalen Lane has been also making plays. So I would say those two wide receivers, and I would say Bill most definitely, they stand out as young, explosive. They got some explosiveness behind them that you don't see sometimes.
Let me just give you one, you know, legitimate stat about seventh round running backs. In the last 10 years, there's only one running back that's been drafted that has contributed anything meaningful to a team, and that's Isaiah Pacheco in Kansas City. Every other seventh rounder is either out of the league or has been an insignificant player on teams. So it's a long shot contributor. I'm listening.
Well, Professor, let me counter. Let
okay.
me counter.
Okay.
We talked about unique situations, right?
Right.
Then we talk about that. I told you the unique situation of this kid not being able to play his senior year in college, right?
Yep. At
Everybody agreed that if he played his senior year in college, that he would not be in a seven-round pick. He would have been more of a fourth, fifth-round, third-round pick maybe.
Right.
So the talent was there. The unique situation is there. Most of those seven-rounders didn't have that unique situation. All right, we all know how running backs go when it comes to tread on the tires. All right, most of them that rush for the most yards in college usually don't be great in the NFL. Too much treads off the tires. This guy has a lot of tread on the tires. So I would counter your seven-round statistics and say this.
Yeah.
The Smoothonomics is going to make this, because I like to do people first when it comes to football players, and I think sometimes people take the people prospect out of that.
I know, and I would counter your counter with, I am open to unique situations, but at the end of the day, there are probably a lot of reasons that backs fall to the seventh round. So bottom line is, I gave you the numbers on seventh rounders over the last 10 years.
All right. Here go one more little tidbit in unique situation this seventh rounder finds himself in. Not only is he going to the team with a legit dual quarterback, he's going to a team that went to the NFC Championship last year. He's in a backfield that uniquely, he has a true legit chance to play.
Yeah, true.
Brian Robinson, Eckler, this guy has a legit, like, usually seven rounders do not have a chance to play on the playoff team. That's why I'm telling you he has a unique situation that's going to give him a chance at one point this year. At some point this year, going to give him the chance to showcase his talent. And uniquely, he's going to do that behind who I just call the Wild Boys, a.k.a. the Divine Swine, this new offensive line. Let me tell you something. All right, when you speak it out and you tell the truth about this offensive line, the potential of it, when it comes to Laramie Tunsil being an all-pro left tackle, when it comes to Coleman, I'm telling you right now, as good as he did last year at tackle, I think he's going to be a dynamic guard with Pro Bowl potential. Beatis is a Pro Bowler, all right? At right guard, Pro Bowler, all right? And then you got Connelly, who's learning at the right tackle. I'm telling you, this offensive line could be great. It could be great, especially going into the future. So uniquely, Dollar Bill has a chance.
Give me the player defensively so far this summer that has stood out the most to you.
Trey Amos, listen to me. Trey Amos has this why unique confidence. When I say watching this kid in press coverage brings a tear to my eye, professor, pass me the tissue. All right? This is what I'm going to tell you, because watching this kid with the patience at the line, he understands football. Watching him with the plays through the practices with New England, watching him every day, he hasn't backed down from one challenge. I think uniquely, I think he got a chance to be very good and play a very, very long time in this league. Like, seriously. Will Harris has been all over the place. All right? No, all over the place. Like, I've seen him make a play. The one battle that I have uniquely just been watching, him and Zach Ertz have been going blow for blow. And I'm talking about daily, going at it. And it's been a heavyweight bout too. It ain't one of these first rounds. They going round for round, and they going back and forth.
Cast yesterday, there was a lot more with Fred. If you want to listen to it, he's always great. Real quickly, I just put out a text to a couple of agents, and I just asked the question that I brought up yesterday: is it typical for there to be an expiration date on a contract offer? And they both said, yes, it's very typical. And I said, what would it be for Terry at this point? And they said, more likely than not, the start of the regular season or something approaching the regular season where the team says, take it by then, or we're going to, pull the offer and we're going to focus on the season once it starts. So it is apparently a typical thing to have an expiration date on a contract. All right, that's it. Actually, I won't be in tomorrow. Denton will be in for me. Chris Russell's next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Is a little bit nicer than I think most of us. Not everybody, but most of us. He is the first person to very politely get in front of a microphone and say, Terry needs to be in practice. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980 on a Friday. Got Max in the house, got Brian in the house. No Terry in the house, at least not on the practice field. He is there in Ashburn, but he is not practicing. And look, it's been a month at this point of this back and forth with Terry this and Terry that and Adam Peters this and Adam Peters that. But what we had not had in any of that was somebody saying anything even remotely not positive. I'm not going to say negative because I don't view these comments by Cliff Kingsbury that you'll hear in a second as negative. But they're also not like uberly positive. And up until this point, every single comment that had been made in regards to Terry, either from Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, Cliff Kingsbury before this, players when asked, everything had been positive about, yeah, you know what, business is business. We just will be ready for him when he's here. Or something along those lines. Paraphrasing, people talk differently, but it's been something along those lines. Until today, when Cliff Kingsbury decided he wanted to put a little bit of pressure, just a tiny, tiny bit of pressure on Terry to get himself to practice. Because now we are halfway through August. This is not early August. This is not midway through. We are halfway through the month of August. And you're getting to the point where in the blink of an eye, you'll be able to count the days to week one on your two hands without repeating fingers. And if Terry still isn't there by that point, then there's going to need to be a serious conversation about, will he actually play week one? How much will he play week one? And so on and so forth. So before I get too much deeper into this, I want you to hear these comments from Cliff. There's four of them that we're going to play, and then we will discuss these a little bit further. We will take your calls on this topic as well at 301-230-0980. So we'll just kind of go in order here, Max. Cliff spoke earlier today. They were scheduled initially at the beginning of the week to have a Thursday or Friday practice at 1 p.m. due to heat, weather, just liking to practice early in the morning. Whatever the reason is, they moved practice from 1 to, I believe it started at either 8 or 9, but that meant that Cliff and Joe Witt spoke before practice. So Cliff Kingsbury was up and at him today talking about Terry McLaurin and the offense as a whole. Here's what Cliff said about Terry and the time on task, or lack thereof.
And then with Terry, what kind of things can you do now even to help make sure that when he gets back out of the field, that there's not this long transition period to get that rhythm and connection back with Jaden?
Yeah, with him or just kind of overall?
With Terry in particular.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been a ton of contact with him. You know, he's been here, but he's been working with the trainers. So until he gets back on the grass, that's when we'll start building that back up.
At that point, what can you do at that point to make sure it doesn't take a long time?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of those deals. It's just time on task. And luckily they had last year to build a lot of rapport and chemistry. And Terry understands our system going into a year or two. So that should expedite the process. But to me, it's time on task together on the grass is really the only way that you can continue to build.
All right. So there are some flags in here that we need to address in those specific comments first. I think an orange flag, Max, is that Cliff was kind of nudging and saying he needs to get on the practice field. He needs to get on the grass. We're going to label that as an orange flag. It's not a reason for alarm, but it's also not a green flag. You see orange and you're like, all right, there's something going on here that isn't absolutely spectacular. We are labeling as a red flag the fact that Cliff Kingsbury just said there has not been a lot of contact between himself and Terry. Because through this entire process, I was under the impression, and likely you were under the impression, that while Terry wasn't practicing, he was still participating in every other way, shape, or form. Attending meetings, talking to people, hanging out with teammates, so on and so forth. Anything that you could consider participating inside the building, I was under the impression that he was doing all of that. Just when it came time to practice, he would work with the trainers, handle whatever the day had in regards to the training. That could be running, stretching, mobility, whatever their plan was. And then eventually he would come out to practice, sign some autographs, go back in, do the meetings, do the film, all of those things. What Cliff Kingsbury just said is there has not been a lot of that. So that is the first red flag that we are going to hold up on the comments that Cliff Kingsbury made today about Terry McLaurin. He went further. So this is what Cliff said about the classroom work with Terry to this point in the offseason.
Hey, Cliff, going back to Terry real quick, you talk about, you know, gelling with the offense on the grass. How much work are you getting with him in the classroom, and kind of at this point of the season, how high value is that? Is the meeting work?
Yeah, I think, you know, not as much as we would if he was full go. There's no doubt. But I think, like I said, I'm huge on walkthroughs, on practice, things like that, because until you get on the grass and actually do it and feel the timing, feel the depths of routes and things of that nature, I don't know exactly how much you can get out of that. So I think we're kind of at that point to where we need to start getting those guys when they're available out there and gelling and seeing what we are as an offense.
So these are two red flags here. It doubles down what Cliff just said, doubles down on what I took away from the first comment. Is that Terry is not as active as I was under the impression he was when it comes to classroom work, meetings, working with the offense, being in communication with at least Cliff. Maybe he's talking to wide receiver coaches. Maybe he's talking to other guys on the staff. But from what Cliff just said there, there has not been a ton of communication in terms of the classroom work. Now, I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination on how to run a football team. But I would think that if you cannot get out there on the grass, you would maybe go extra hard on the non-grass-related things in the classroom, in meetings, in film. I would think there would be an emphasis on doing all of those things, maybe to a greater degree, to make sure that when you eventually and inevitably do make your way back to the grass, you hit the ground running, pun fully intended there. From what Cliff said in the beginning portion of that statement, that is not happening the way that I was under the belief that it was happening. And then red flag number two, that's three for anyone that is counting on just two clips. Red flag number three is that he is urging Terry to get back out there. And again, this is the first time that anybody has had any real sense of urgency when it comes to speaking about Terry publicly. Behind closed doors, I'm sure this has been said for days, weeks, potentially months. But for the first time publicly, someone is saying, we would really like it if he gets to practice, if he is out there so he can gel with this unit, if he is out there so me as a coach, I understand what I am working with. And you know what Terry is like, so there is a little bit of benefit of this is not a new offense. This is not a whole lot of new faces on the coaching staff. So you understand what Terry represents as a player from a skill set position. But I'm also not expecting, and you should not be expecting, the offense in 2025 to be exactly the same as the offense in 2024. There are going to be adjustments, especially with the addition of a guy like Adebo Samuel, who you can now move around in a bunch of different ways, especially with the addition of a guy like Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt and how that impacts the rotation with the running backs and the addition of Laremy Tunsil. And there's so many different new pieces on this offense that there was bound to be some sort of adjustment and just natural evolution from year to year. You can't go from year to year having the exact same thing. Eventually, defenses are going to catch on, and eventually they'll find ways to stop it. So it's fair to think that they're going to be making some changes. And now, because we are halfway through the month of August, Terry has not been out on the field practicing any of those changes, any of those evolutions in the offense. And from what Cliff has just said in those last two sound bites, he's not getting as much classroom work as I think Cliff certainly wants him to have been having. I mean, he's not saying this if he's thrilled with what's going on right now. This is a little bit of an opening into what is going on behind closed doors. He continued here. Here's what he said about the offense continuing to gel throughout training camp.
Hi, Coach. Looking at this offense overall, have you seen them come together, starting to mash and gel?
Yeah, I think that's a work in progress. There's no doubt. I don't think until we get some of these other pieces back, we're going to know exactly what we are. We've had some good opportunities to see other guys get work in these positions, but when you don't have your kind of projected top two outside receivers, you know, one of your projected or both of your projected inside pieces at guard, it's not going to really give you the chance to gel or really build that relationship until you get everybody else on the grass. So that's something we have to get to over the next 3 weeks.
There is a little bit of frustration here, Max, that I don't know we have heard a ton from Cliff Kingsbury in the first year and change of him being here in DC.
And there's one little moment in it that I feel like you hear the frustration. It's where he like pauses when you don't have your, and then he thinks for a second. He's like, "Oh, I got to throw Noah Brown's name in here too." So
like, I got to add more than just Terry here. I can't keep taking shots at the number one wide receiver, because don't make any mistake about it. Terry is listening. Like he is listening. His agent is listening to these comments. We are at the point where this is really like crunch time to get a deal done. There is a different sense of urgency, I feel like, to get a deal done, because again, it's August 15th. You play a real legitimate football game in less than a month. None of this preseason nonsense against Cincinnati and a bad defense, against a joint practice that is no longer, against the Baltimore Ravens. You play a real legitimate game against a real divisional opponent who, by the way, happens to have a really good defense, or at least is projected to have a really good defense. I don't know that that offense is going to be spectacular, but I have no issue being honest and saying that defensive line for New York is frightening. They got a bunch of dudes out there. So I do like that he did include, we'll give Cliff a green flag for this. I do like that he also included the guards, with Brandy Coleman obviously being the big one there. Now that's a red flag in itself, because Coleman now has missed a significant chunk of time as well with his own injury. So it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but how much are you really going to get better on offense in training camp if you do not have your full slate of offensive weapons that are out there on the field? And this is the time where you are supposed to be getting better. I have never been one, and I don't think I ever will be one, to freak out over a bad preseason highlight. I've been on the other side where I've had some positive freakouts. We all remember the summer of Doctson and Pryor. We all were there. We freaked out together. We're like, oh, my God, look at this one-handed grab. Oh, my God, he's mossing defenders. Like, we all were there. We've had some positive freakouts. I've never been one to have a negative freakout about something going on in training camp, because I understand this is when you are supposed to be getting all of the issues out of your system. You're kind of supposed to be bad in training camp so you can be good by the start of the regular season, to get everybody on the same page and to really hit the ground running in the regular season. If Terry is not out there, if Noah is not out there, if Brandon Coleman is not out there, what are your realistic expectations going to be? Because the unfortunate reality for how Washington and their schedule line up in 2025, it's a lot more difficult than 2024. There aren't a lot of rest periods that you could point to and say, well, at least you have two or three games that should be comfortable. There were a bunch of those last year. Not the case this year. So having your guys miss significant chunks of time, now having your offensive coordinator speak in a way that is not your super pro pom-pom cheerleader, get Terry out here, we're so excited for him when he's here. This is the first time where anyone's been like, we need to get all of our guys out here or our expectations are going to be shifted. One final thing from Cliff here again. This is all from this morning. This was about like 8:30 a.m., 8 a.m., whenever Cliff got to the microphone. So this is all from this morning. Here's what Cliff said about the wide receiver group as a whole so far throughout training camp.
And have you been able to see from the wide receiver room what you need to see from that group, and how are they shaping up together?
Yeah, it's still a work in progress. Some guys are taking advantage of the opportunities and some have not. And that's what we wanted to see. Without, you know, Terry and Noah getting much, we know what Debo is. And then there's a lot of guys that are trying to earn a roster spot. And so that competition has been good, but I think there's still a lot to show over the next 3 weeks.
This is not maybe great for the Ja'Cory Brooks hive, the Jalen Lane hive. We probably need better nicknames. You know, the hive was great with Heinicke and Howe because there was alliteration.
Exactly.
So I might need a little bit more time to think of what we call those fan bases who have been very, very loud. And to their credit, I'm excited about Jalen Lane. I'm very optimistic about Ja'Cory Brooks making the roster, but I have not stooped down to the level where I think Ja'Cory Brooks is going to replace the production that Terry has had by any stretch of the imagination.
Hey, man, I've heard reports out of training camp this morning that he's been making some great plays.
He made a tough catch today. Sick. I'm not of the belief that he is going to replace Terry. So those guys have had good summers, certainly. You think they're going to make the roster? Certainly. But they need Terry, they need Noah Brown out there. So just in four comments there, we had what we will call definitively three red flags from Cliff, and he was the first person to nudge Terry McLaurin to say, hey, buddy, we would like you at practice. We need you at practice. If we want to achieve the goals that we have set for ourselves and that are being set by the outside world, myself, those of us on this station, those of us across the hall, the national media, everybody considering Washington a legitimate contender for a Super Bowl for the first time in well over a decade, Vegas in there as well, they think very, very highly of Washington in the NFC. If we're going to achieve all of these things, we need Terry McLaurin, and we need Terry McLaurin to practice. Your thoughts, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What do you make of the comments that Cliff Kingsbury just made about Terry McLaurin and how that impacts your expectations for the season? We will take some of your phone calls. You can tweet me as well, at The Denton Day. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.